and then we'll come back. So, was it there?
Yeah, somewhere.
No. Okay, so we're going to switch the order. And for those of you who are here for one versus the other, I'm sorry, but I think it's our best option at this time. So I'm going to introduce Gail Bercy, who's with the Division of Chronic Disease and Injury Prevention from the region of Peel, which is in Canada. And she sent me an interesting comment that by working on obesity prevention, that they quickly realized that policy and environmental supports were essential to deal with this. And so she's going to talk about some tools that they developed. Thank you. It's the left clicker. I'm going to just run out in the hall and see if there's any person out there.
Hi. Whoops. I have nothing to declare, but everybody said something witty at this point after they say they have nothing. Not, I just said declare, didn't I? Across the border. Nothing to disclose. Well, there's my witty comment. We should actually have a contest to see who has the wittiest disclosure comment. But I will say that we've really received a warm welcome. I really thought I would be feeling like I was coming to another country, which obviously I am. But it's a public health community that I think has a lot of shared values, and it really felt like coming home, being around people who, you know, ultimately want to make a difference in people's lives and improve the quality of their life. So we have an outline, and I know about Amy and the ending. So I'm just going to say that basically we came all the way to hear about what you're doing on health impact assessment and to tell you about what we've been doing on it. And I'll just show you a bit of a map so that you can have a sense of where we are. If you are in New York State and you look up, there's Lake Ontario, and then there's a place called Toronto, and then to the west of that is Peel Region. It's a region of about 1 million people growing really, really quickly. How quickly? 30,000 new souls a year find their way to us. From Asian countries, South Asian countries, Africa, and European countries. And obviously that growth offers us a huge opportunity to work with our colleagues in planning. We also have similar trends that you see here in the U.S. around BMI. This is a graph showing that in Peel we're pretty car dependent, and because even underweight people have less physical activity than the provincial, which is equivalent to the state average. So we've got some work to do. And our work is a little bit different than the presentations I've heard on this topic in the last couple of days, in that we're looking at greenfield development, new development. We're looking into the future and trying to prevent the impact of diabetes. So this graph shows that we're higher than the provincial average in terms of diabetes prevalence. That may be in part due to a large South Asian population who have a predisposition, but it's also related to the car-dependent community that we live in, high-fat diets, etc. So last week we were at Regional Council, which is our governing body, our Board of Health, and we were explaining to them what this would cost over the next few years. So we took the obesity rates, projected them out, and then calculated in the attributable risk for diabetes and current health care costs. $12 million a year to increase the walkability by 10% would be saved. So sorry, is it already sets there?
Yeah,
okay. So the interesting thing for us in Canada is that $12 million is paid by the same people that pay for the development. So what we are trying to show is that you're going to be held accountable, and we as your health advisors feel accountable to this diabetes train that's coming at us. So just dialysis alone is going to bankrupt our healthcare system. So the next task we tried to tackle was the complexity of this issue. So you know how children can make you feel so humble? My son looked at this and he said, oh, so everything's related to everything. Where are you supposed to start? So yes, everything is related to everything, but the point is, if you just look at the scope of this issue, health and the built environment, all the relationships, and these are relationships where there is a proven association within the literature. We have about 25 of these. They were developed by a man named Paul Conway at the Public Health Agency of Canada, and he's a fascinating guy. He does this system thinking for a living, and what he does is map these relationships onto a model. So instead of reading the literature review we did, you can look at this and see all the relationships. So the point is, something that's complicated needs a complicated assessment process. or some kind of a tool. Now, the next couple of slides, Bhavna put them in for me just to deal with my pet peeve about this issue, which is that the issue meaning obesity prevention. I think obesity prevention is an interesting entry point, but the more we've thought about it and looked at it, and this has been since 2002 when we first sent a report to council, the more I'm convinced that it obviously needs to be the built environment focus, but also the food environment focus. And I heard a lot of presentations here over the last couple of days that confirmed my thinking on this. I'm actually a nutritionist by training, but kind of a closet nutritionist since I have quite the passion for high-fat food. But it's kind of a standing joke. But one study that really makes this clear to me is the Cuban study, where people, because of some political unrest, had to walk. They couldn't take public transport, what there is, or drive. There wasn't gas, and there wasn't food. And when they looked over time at what happened to those folks, their weight didn't go down. So if they can't do it as a whole population, and we look into the literature and see there isn't sustainable weight loss among the folks that are looked at clinical trials. So if the free living and the clinical trials don't really lose it, why are we even focusing on obesity prevention? If anything, it just almost sets us up for more trouble. So I think we really need to focus on the food and the built environment. And the food environment sits within the built environment. But I'm feeling quite... it's almost like after you've had children, then you do some of those nutrition presentations. You think, what am I saying to people? You know, you shouldn't be let loose in the public until you've had a couple of really difficult children. So I feel accountable for what we said. Yes, and my children actually consider me personally responsible for every health message that's come to them through the school system, getting rid of the vending machines, the daily physical activity. Oh, this is probably your idea. Anyway, I feel accountable to make sure that we don't dump the individual response of behavior change, but that we focus on getting the built environment and the food environment sorted out before we do too much more on behavior. But at the end of the day, if we build it, they can be healthier, but they won't necessarily, so I think we still need some behavioral messages. And I see some nods. This is making sense to you. So one of the ways I capture this, because we struggle with trying to explain this to regional councillors who sometimes agree with us, and sometimes they will say, well, stop eating. So I mean, you can't start into a huge physiological discussion about how food triggers dopamine releases and how when your blood sugars you make impulse decisions. But last week they made a decision on this issue at 12:45. So I do think glucose does affect decision making. I think it would be a hilarious study to look at governing bodies and what time of day they make different decisions, because it never fails. Those decisions between 12 and 1 can be quite vicious. So what I'm talking about here, one of the ways to encapsulate is the food environment in a European model. So thinking about how you would eat in a European city such as Paris or France. So small portions of very flavorful food that's lovingly prepared and enjoyed in the slow food movement kind of approach. And similarly with the built environment, a community that you can live and walk and move in, and so you naturally collect your X number of minutes of activity a day. So we took a report to Regional Council asking them to support some recommendations. That's how our system works. We put the recommendations in, and they can move them as motions, or they can adjust them. But we always kind of like a Trojan horse put lots in case some fall out, so at least you still get something useful. But this particular week, in 2005, there had been an announcement about urban sprawl and a study that our Heart and Stroke Foundation had done. So they just loved it, and they strengthened the recommendation. So we were kind of shocked when we found out that they actually had passed the one where we were going to comment on all the applications for development, because that's considerable workload. And we really lacked anything other than narrative comments. We didn't have an objective tool. And when we looked in the literature, we're not seeing a whole lot in the way of an objective tool with targets and quantifiable measures. So we set out, since the second one was study and make recommendations, we put that in knowing we didn't really have something. We decided to, under number 7 there, work on the development of an assessment tool. The other things are also on our website, and you can look at them. I'm going to turn it over to Bhavna now to talk about the tool, and I'll just, as she's coming up, mention that in terms of mandate, we are mandated throughout Ontario to work with partners in planning to develop healthier built environments, but Quebec has the best mandate. Theirs is both proactive and reactive, and there's no other province, and I haven't really seen it in other jurisdictions, that have that ability as a health department. So they can comment on any policy automatically. They don't have to chase it down. It comes to them. And if there's been a huge incident, like a huge traffic accident, they can react and give advice in terms of the future policies or projects that are done under that initiative. Thank you.
Would you introduce Bhavna, please?
I'm sorry. Okay. Bhavna Sivanand, about a year ago, came our way and has enjoyed this project. Bhavna, although it certainly had its ups and downs, Bhavna's the project lead for this initiative.
Hi, thank you.
We have four more minutes.
Great, no problem. So four more minutes, and I will cover... No, not at all. So what we're doing at Peel, one of the things we're trying to do is we're building what we're calling an urban forum health assessment tool to systematically identify some of the public health impacts of built environments in Peel. We're working with Dr. Larry Frank from the University of British Columbia that some of you may be familiar with, as well as Dr. James Dunn, who's a research scientist at the Centre for Inner City Health and an associate professor at the University of Toronto. Our goal with this project is really just to increase the number of developments that are being put forth in Peel that have higher walkability levels and are more health promoting. So there are two primary data sets being used for this project, the first one being land use variables that are being used to measure the built environment across Peel region. So that can sort of be thought of as your independent variables. We've obtained data from regional and municipal GIS sources on parks and trail locations, transit centers, routes and stops, green space, sidewalk attribution. We've also collected information on property assessment parcels and sort of the land use mixes that are within the parcels, the function of each parcel, the building square footage within each parcel, as well as road networks, how interconnected are our roads, where are the signalized intersections, where are their cul-de-sacs, and things like that. The second set of data that we've collected for this project are health data, which come from two major surveys, the first one being the Transportation Tomorrow Survey, which is a province-wide administered survey that looks at travel behavior. It really looks at modes of travel to work and school during peak hours, commute times, public transit use, and things like that. The other survey that our data comes from is the Canadian Community Health Survey, which is a nationwide survey, and that collects health outcome data of different kinds. And what we've pulled from that are health outcomes that are really relevant to built environments, such as physical activity, BMI, obesity levels, and other chronic conditions like asthma and respiratory disease and those types of measures. What then happens is using the land use variables that we provided to the researchers, what they're planning on doing is calculating the different built environment measures that have been associated most closely with health outcomes, either in previous or ongoing research. So those tend to be density, mixed land use, proximity, and street connectivity. So they're using the land use variables that we've provided to calculate those measures. I've indicated this in a schematic just because I just said a bunch of unstrung together words. So what happens is the land use variables that we've provided are being layered together, so things such as building square footage, street connectivity, everything that I've talked about, being layered on the postal code polygons for Peel to get a sense of what it looks like for Peel. And then the travel patterns from the TTS and the health outcomes from the CCHS are being added to that data layer. What then happens is we have a walkability surface for Peel that has, for each postal code, various land use variables, plus the calculated built environment measures such as density and street connectivity, and then the health outcomes from the CCHS and the TTS. We're also adding demographic information so to make sure that we're not that there's no confounds between the relationship between the built environment measures and health. So we're adding income and age and gender and those kinds of information in there as well. And then the researchers are adding the sort of the relationships that have been previously established between street connectivity and density and then health outcomes such as walkability. Those weights, statistical weights, are being added to the model as well, so that then we have this data layer with the statistical weights that can be presented as either a spreadsheet format with the various equations that we would manipulate or in a user-friendly software model. We propose to use the software model just because it is user-friendly. I'm going to skip this slide just for the interest of time and talk about we're planning on using Places 3 as a model, which I don't know if some of you may know that it's been used for environmental assessments. It's recently being used in King County, Seattle for health assessments as well. And the reason that we're going with this is because it meets our requirements for a model in terms of being really flexible to adapt to newer data that we might get. Our TTS and our CCHS data are updated every 2 years, so our model needs to be flexible enough to incorporate those new data as they become available. As well, it provides for a visual output because it is GIS-based, and all our data is GIS-based, so it allows for public engagement and collaborative decision-making because the idea is to have everybody at the table the developers and, you know, environmental health planners and public health, and to see really what's being dialed up and what's being dialed down. How much density are you increasing and what kind of health outcome does it impact? And then using that to make trade-off decisions. I'm just going to talk briefly about just 1 minute on policy. What we're really looking at is trying to strengthen our initiative through policy development. Of course, once the tool is developed, we have to pilot test it in greenfield development, which is happening in Brampton, and retrofit it in our suburb, Mississauga, which is mostly built up and is just dealing with infill development. We're also looking at policy development in terms of a regional official plan amendment starting next year to strengthen the health rationale that exists within existing policies and also to mandate the use of the health assessment tool once it's created. And we also are looking at requiring health as a background study at the secondary plan stage so that developers, when they propose a secondary plan, they have to conduct a health assessment in addition to the environmental assessment, the transportation assessment, or the cultural and heritage assessment that they have to already conduct that's mandated at the municipal level. And then finally, we're looking at developer incentives or potentially using the health assessment tool as a marketing strategy for developers that may already be proponents of sustainable development to get that developer buy-in in order to help us proceed forward with the policy piece. So we have a website for more information, and you're welcome to contact me as well if you have additional questions. Thank you very much.
Why don't you come on up and see if you can load your thing. We have an IT guy. Yay. And while we're trying to do that, would you all be willing to take a couple questions?
Sure.
Okay, does anyone have any questions or comments that they'd like to make?
Yeah.